It's the end of an era in Germany today. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Angela Merkel's 16 years as German Chancellor drew to a close this morning to a standing ovation in the nation's lower house of parliament. Affectionately called Mutti or Mother by the people of Germany, Mrs. Merkel has steered her country through tumultuous times. She navigated the Eurozone debt crisis, the 2008 financial collapse, and most recently, the coronavirus pandemic and the heavy economic toll that has taken. But she's also overseen economic expansion of more than 34% during her tenure. At a swearing-in ceremony this morning, Mrs. Merkel officially handed the reins to her former finance minister, the Social Democrat Olaf Scholz. In September, as voters prepared to head to the polls, we traveled through Western Germany, home to thousands of companies supporting the backbone of Europe's biggest economy, and we heard what they want from their next chancellor.
My name is Michael Göpfert. I am CEO of Skio Automation Group in Germany. Some of our customers, and they are waiting since 15 months to get the allowance to build a new building. And that's impossible. If I go to US or go to Asia, it's normally a day-by-day business.
I'm Jonah Christians. I'm co-founder and co-CEO of Sono Motors. We need a better infrastructure. So right now, all the subsidies are made for rather big companies, and we need to change there.
Well, that's just a taste of what business wants, but what will they get? Christian Schultz, an economist at Citi in Frankfurt, explains what the priorities are for Germany's new government.
The previous government was good in securing people's income and wealth and firms' balance sheets through the pandemic recession. What was lacking was a bit of stimulus to demand so that really the economy emerges from this pandemic with a bang, with some real momentum. So we need more spending, perhaps some tax cuts in order to get animal spirits going. And then, of course, we need public investment to accompany the longer term adjustment of the economy to the new environment.
One of the coalition's top priorities, it said, is that it doesn't want to take on any new debt. And the government, during the pandemic, like many others throughout the world did, borrowed billions to weather the crisis. But how feasible, really, is this promise not to take on any more new debt, particularly with the emergence of the new Omicron variant?
Well, the government has another year where the fiscal rules, both nationally and at the European level, will probably be suspended. So in the short run, there's enough fiscal space for them to deal with the pandemic. But indeed, in the longer run, they'll have to rebalance the books again. They're forced to do that by the fiscal rules. And they'll have to repay the extra debt that they accumulated during the pandemic. So fiscal room is very limited. And that's going to be a big constraint on what the government can do. They'll have to be creative.
Do you think the presence of this three-part coalition will bring a set of challenges when it comes to economic reforms? Do you foresee any kind of disagreement ahead?
They are in a honeymoon period at the moment, but there will be tougher challenges ahead on fiscal policy, on migration potentially, on the green policy transitions and the investments that have to be done there. So it will be challenging from that perspective. They don't have a majority in Germany's upper house, so in the regions, so they'll have to work also with the opposition CDU. And on top of that, they can't change the fiscal rules, so they'll run into financial constraints. So I do think it's going to be challenging for Olaf Scholz over the next 4 years. I don't expect that the government will not last the full 4 years, but there will be tensions, I'm sure.
Christian Schultz, Deputy Chief European Economist at Citi in Frankfurt. Thanks for breaking this down for us this morning.
Thank you.
Germany's DAX is down 0.6% this morning, but that's on par with similar declines across most other European benchmarks. Checking some other numbers, Chinese social media giant Weibo made its stock market debut in Hong Kong. Shares, though, shed more than 7% as Chinese tech firms have faced intense pressure at home and abroad, including more scrutiny from U.S. regulators. Well, the U.K.'s International Trade Secretary, Anne-Marie Trevelyan, is meeting U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo in Washington later today. Britain wants America to lift tariffs on steel and aluminum exports, and it's keen to strengthen transatlantic ties after Brexit. But immediate progress might not come from the federal government, as the BBC's Chris Morris explains.
Tariffs imposed on European steel and aluminium exports by the Trump administration have now been lifted for companies based in the EU. But they're still in place for UK companies, with time running out to find a resolution. With no immediate prospect of a wider free trade deal, the UK is also turning its attention to individual American states, including California, Georgia, and South Carolina, to try to increase cooperation on services and digital trade in particular. I'm the BBC's Chris Morris for Marketplace.
Discovery of the Omicron coronavirus variant has thrown the spotlight back on COVID-19 vaccines. Timelines for booster shots have been shortened, and governments are encouraging citizens to get vaccinated as the holiday season inches closer. Why, then, has the world's biggest vaccine maker said it will halve the number of shots it produces? The BBC's Shautik Biswas in Delhi has the answer.
Why have they run out of orders? One reason is that India's vaccination has picked up speed. The other reason is the gap between the first and the second dose of Covishield, which was expanded from 8 to 12 to 16 weeks. So there's always a little bit of a time gap between these two. And I do believe that this is a temporary kind of excess. There's no still federal strategy on booster doses. We expect a strategy very soon. Once it decides on booster doses, and the question, next question will be which of these vaccines is fit for the booster dose. Will these be fit, or will imported mRNA vaccine be considered, or some other vaccine be considered with a couple of them in the pipeline?
You know, we talk about booster shots for a lot of these populations that have already gotten their first and second doses, but many developing nations still need to get the first and second doses to their population. So the question many might ask is, well, why doesn't the Serum Institute just send those half billion doses to some of those other countries? But it's logistics that's really the problem here, isn't it?
They're saying that they're in touch with the leaders of countries, but also remember that each of these exports will have to be, in a sense, greenlit by the government, because, you know, it's not free exports. That's why Poonawalla said that he'd asked the government to ease export conditions and make it easier to export. So what does it mean is that every time Serum wants to export and send vaccines outside the country, either privately or to COVAX, it will have to take permission of the government. And that also might have slowed down the process in terms of surplus. So what I think he's trying to say is fix your booster strategy, let us know how much if you need boosters, and also ease exports so we can send these vaccines out faster to people who need it most.
The BBC's Shautik Biswas for us in New Delhi. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.